Nothing can stop me, I'm all the way up. All the way up. I'm all the way up. I'm all the way up. Nothing can stop me, I'm all the way up.
Show it what you want, show it what you need. My Knicks run game, we ain't never leave.
Never leave.
Counting up this money, we ain't never sleep.
Never sleep.
You got V12, I got 12 V's. Got bottles, got weed, got my
I'm all the way up.
Show it what you want, I got what you need. Shorty, what you want? I got what you need.
Huh?
Shorty, what you want? I got what you need.
I'm all the way up. Huh?
Welcome to the Thunderous Transmissions podcast. I'm your host, Sean Woods. Joining me this week is a little bit of a change-up. I've been following him on Twitter for a while now. He is a soon-to-be attorney, one that is taking the bar soon, but also a Thunder fan, a guy you should definitely follow on Twitter, at JPOSU. It's Jason Potter. Jason, how's it going, man?
Going great, man. How are you?
I'm pretty good. It's been a hectic week. I was on another podcast yesterday, Ty Windisch, Time Out with Ty, and you know, we sort of talked about how it's been like, you know, five days since KD signed, and I can't decide whether that's a really long time or a really short time. But we're going to talk about a lot of that today, everything dealing with Oklahoma City, but definitely starting with Kevin Durant. So the first question I want to ask, because I have a feeling that you're going to remember it for a while, and I know I am. Where were you when the Durant news broke?
So actually, I slept in that day. I've gotten on kind of a weird schedule studying for the bar exam. You know, I don't really have any real structure to my day, so I didn't get to sleep till like 3:30 a.m. The day before. So I woke up at like 11:15, and I think actually the news broke at like, you know, 10:30. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I groggily picked up my phone and looked at it, and I'm on a group text with some of my friends from Oklahoma, and the first thing I see is Jason must have thrown his phone through a wall, and I was like, I pretty much knew.
Yeah, I was actually just sitting on my couch just refreshing Twitter, and actually I guess it's just TweetDeck, so it was refreshing on its own, waiting, and then suddenly I see KD tweet out the Players Tribune article on, you know, what I'm going to do next or my future, whatever the hell it was called. Mm-hmm. And I really just skimmed it until I saw the words either Oklahoma City Thunder or Golden State Warriors and just kind of read from wherever that was. And it was definitely, it was a little disheartening just because I wanted to root for him, you know, for the next however many years. But I guess that's something we can talk about a little bit too. What are your general feelings on him leaving?
I'm just sad, man. I'm just so sad. Like, I mean, really, KD got me back into following the NBA. You know, I used to be a fan like when I was a teenager, when I was young, but honestly, like in, I think 2002, the Lakers, Sacramento finals, whenever the refs were just horrible and Sacramento lost, I just was disillusioned, and I basically didn't really follow the NBA probably for another 6 years. I was mostly a college basketball fan, and actually in like 2007, I was a student at Oklahoma State, and we were playing Texas, you know, and I went I saw this game where Kevin Durant, triple overtime, drops 40 points. I was just amazed that a player like this could even exist, you know, like obviously 7 foot tall, silky smooth jumper, amazing handle. And then when you know, he came with the Sonics to become the Thunder, I just, you know, I was immediately hooked, and it's gotten me back into following the NBA at large and the Thunder as well. And so I feel like it's just like almost a part of me is gone, you know, and it's just so brutal. I just didn't really see him leaving this offseason. I was so certain when that series ended, you know, when the final buzzer went off in Game 7 against the Warriors, I was just like, there's no way he can leave, especially not for the Warriors. You know, I thought maybe, like, if Boston makes a couple of moves and turns their assets into some players, maybe he'll think about that. But I just, you know, Draymond's going around kicking people in the nuts, and they were just so close, so close. And I just didn't think there's any way he could do it. But yeah, just really sad overall.
Yeah, I said this, and I'm not going to repeat myself too much, but I said yesterday that I'm not – like, there's this general feeling going around Oklahoma City beat writers and guys, you know, I'm not going to name any names specifically, but just people out there that really seem, like, mad at Kevin Durant, and now everything he does is just the worst thing in the world. And in no way am I mad at Kevin Durant. Like, he gave 9 years of his time to Oklahoma City, and, you know, when you're talking about NBA cities, like – it sucks, but Oklahoma City's just really not that high. You know, it's definitely in the bottom third. And, you know, if you're talking about, like, a lifestyle and just places where you can do different things, like, Oklahoma City's just not that high up there. But I'm more disappointed that I don't get to root for Kevin Durant on my favorite team anymore. But it doesn't extend much past that. I'm happy for him. I think Golden State's going to be incredibly intriguing next year, but... you know, it's just now I don't really know where Oklahoma City stands. But before we get there, let's talk a little bit about Golden State before we spend, like, the next hour or whatever talking about the Thunder. This is kind of general and vague, and I understand that, but I'm going to ask it anyway. How good do you think Golden State will be? And you can take that to mean whatever, whether postseason success, regular season success. Just how good are the Warriors going to be next year?
God, I mean, it's just really even hard to conceptualize. Just, like, you're adding... I think the best, like, maybe with LeBron, maybe the best player in the league. I still think Kevin Durant is better than Steph Curry right now to a 73 win team. And I just, like, if they're all healthy in the playoffs, like, as far as the regular season, I don't think they're going to, like, some people are saying they're going to win 76 games. I just don't think they're going to care about the regular season. And they just don't really have the depth to, like, play their guys a lot of minutes. I think they'll win something like 65 games, you know, while coasting, essentially. But then in the playoffs, like, if they're healthy, if all four of those guys are healthy, I don't think anyone has, I mean, like, the Spurs and the Cavs have got to have the best shot against them. Although Utah is interesting. But I mean, those teams have maybe, I think, a 10% chance to beat them in a series. And that might be high. I just, like, you've got three of the best shooters ever on the same court all at once, and you've got a playmaking point forward to go with them. Like, it's literally unguardable. So, yeah, I think barring an injury, they're probably going to lose, like, two or three games in the playoffs.
Yeah, and even in the playoffs, or with an injury, I don't know, I mean... if they lose, I think they would realistically be probably favorites if they lost one of their top four. And you could maybe, I mean, I think it could be either Steph or Durant. I mean, if they lose, you're still talking about Klay Thompson, Draymond, Iguodala, Steph Curry, and it doesn't matter, right? I mean, that's probably the most detrimental five-man lineup. And again, this is something I said yesterday, but you can sit two of those top four players and still have probably the best five-man lineup going against whoever you're playing, which is, I mean, that's just crazy. I agree with what you're saying about regular season success. I don't think they're going to care much, although Fred Katz and Royce Young talked a little bit about, you know, whether or not that's going to stick to Kevin Durant, whether, you know, he goes to Golden State and suddenly they're a little worse in the regular season. And generally, I don't think that's going to matter, although, you know, from what we're hearing now, Kevin Durant hears everything that goes on in the media, so maybe he will care a little bit about that. But I think all of that probably gets erased with the ring. And you know, Golden State's definitely the heavy favorite right now.
Back to your injury comment, I actually think that the most detrimental injury that they could suffer would be Draymond Green.
Yeah.
Just because he does so much for them, and if he's gone, they have no center who can really, you know, play minutes in the playoffs. Like, Zaza Pachulia is all right, David West is all right, but we saw them get run off from the court against the Thunder in the playoffs, both of them. Yeah, I think Draymond would be the most detrimental, and that would be really, really interesting to see how the Warriors would play without him on the floor, but with Steph, Clay, and Durant.
Yeah, I think everyone talks about the Golden State Warriors defense, and I think their defense is going to matter a little less this year just because they added, you know, Kevin Durant. But I agree that he might be the most important player because just with that group, because you're right, he provides that rim protection. He's also able to guard he really has no flaws on defense, and he's still got some playmaking ability on offense. He showed the ability to stretch a little bit, shooting the three, which is, I think, you know, he's obviously the reason that that death lineup or whatever they're going to call it next year is what it is. But I don't know. I just don't think the defense is going to matter quite as much because there's just so much space now for, you know, Klay Thompson's getting a little better off the dribble, but now we're talking about Steph Curry and Kevin Durant never facing a double team, and if they are, one of the best shooters in the world, man, like you said, ever, is going to be open. So I think the offense is going to be incredible when you consider that they were number one in offense by a wide margin according to offensive efficiency last season. Does it get to 120? Does it get to 118? You know, whatever it is, I think that number is going to be ridiculous. And unlike the fit 2 years ago, I know Matt Moore and Zach Harper talked a lot about when the Cavs came together that, you know, the offense is really – it could really be unstoppable. But, you know, it was different because all three of those players sort of needed the ball in their hands to be effective. Kevin Love's a good passer. LeBron James is obviously LeBron James. But they're most effective when the ball is in their hands. You know, you don't think of Kevin Love as a shooter first and foremost, whereas Klay Thompson, Steph Curry, Kevin Durant, like, they obviously are better with the ball in their hands, but they're so, you know, their gravity, you can't leave them alone. You can't give Steph Curry an inch. You can't, you know, even if you're on Kevin Durant, he's got a freaking 7'4 wingspan, so it doesn't matter what you do. But one of those four are going to have to sacrifice sort of what they did this year. You all can't carry a 25 to 30% usage percentage. So who do you think that's going to be? Just who sacrifices the most out of the top four? And we're talking about Draymond, Klay, Steph, or KD.
Yeah, you know, I think you talked about Klay doing a little more off the dribble this season, and I think that he's going to end up being the guy who's going to have to sacrifice, because with adding KD to that lineup, I just don't think they're going to be able to put the ball in Klay Thompson's hands very often, except when a couple of those other guys might be off the floor. I just think he's going to really become more of a catch-and-shoot guy, and I know they like to espouse this egalitarian offense where everybody touches the ball and all that, but I really think that his, you know, playmaking, creating is going to go down quite a bit. He's still going to get his shots just because of the gravity of the other guys, but I definitely don't think his playmaking is going to be as big of an aspect of their offense.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if I might lean a little bit more offensively to Draymond Green just because I think they're going to rely more on him defensively. So they might try to take, and like you said, they've got this ball movement motion offense where no one is really the sole creator. But I think they might try to take the ball out of Draymond's hands a little bit just so he can focus more on defense because, you know, like we talked about earlier, he's the linchpin. He's the reason that their defense has been top five for the past two seasons and number one two seasons ago. But either way, I think, you know, and it's probably not a fair question because one of those four or all four of those four are going to their usage is going to decline a little bit. But one of those, it feels like, is going to have to take a little bigger of a hit than the other three. Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's switch gears. The other side to Kevin Durant leaving is the Thunder future. And it's a little different for the Thunder because you said it earlier, and it's the same way for me. I've been a Thunder fan, you know, not in Seattle, but since they came to Oklahoma City, I've sort of followed them closely and thought, you know, Kevin Durant, Russell Westbrook, and a year later, Serge Ibaka. This is, you know, this is a really fun and a really exciting team. But Oklahoma City has never been a cap team. They've never had any cap room, really, that they can sort of play with and do whatever they want. And suddenly they've got $20 million after you include Sabonis' cap hold. And that's assuming Anthony Morrow is retained. But let's move on. I think first and foremost, when you're talking about the Oklahoma City Thunder right now, you need to talk about Russell Westbrook. So let's just say, let's say that he agrees to an extension, and we'll go into details in just a minute. But do you keep Russell if he agrees to sign an extension?
I think you have to, absolutely. I think that losing both him and Durant, while you know, you'd certainly get some young assets back, I think first and foremost, just the business side of it, I feel like having that superstar is so valuable for a franchise. And also, you know, now that he can be, you know, he can be the guy, he can be the face of the franchise. I think that's just cool to have. And especially, you know, if you can almost like he's the juxtapose him with Kevin Durant going to the Warriors, and if this makes him even more resolute in his commitment to Oklahoma City, it would just be a cool thing for the city and the franchise to have such a high profile player, you know, say, hey, I want to be here. Hey, this is a great place to be. And I think that's really valuable in and of itself before you even start talking about the actual things on the basketball court. And while, you know, I think maybe in 3-4 years, he's probably going to start declining. I don't think he's going to have as long a prime as a lot of other superstars. I still think you just absolutely have to keep him if he wants to be here, even though, you know, I really do worry about whether they could ever become a real contender with just him. I mean, unless some of the other guys really develop quite a bit, I think you might be on that like Memphis Grizzlies trajectory, which, you know, maybe that's not so bad. You know, you're making the playoffs, you're relevant every year. That's really not so bad for a franchise in a small market. But of course, it's you know, it's not what we've been used to.
Yeah, I think I agree. I have some reservations about a Russell Oladipo backcourt because they are both a little ball dominant and inefficient. And I know there's some numbers floating around that Oladipo is a decent three-point shooter, but he was still below average last season. And at the off guard next to Russell Westbrook, when you know you're trying to create as much space as humanly possible, that's not ideal. And you lose Kevin Durant, and you know right now the fit, it looks like Roberson might slide into the three, which I mean that's like negative spacing right there. But just in a vacuum, keep or not keep Russell if he decides to stay, or if he sign an extension, I think you're right, you probably have to go ahead and keep him for that, because you are signing him for his athletic prime, and you might be running into some trouble at the end of that contract, but you're still getting him for all of those good years. It's not like you're signing up for a 30-year-old Russell Westbrook for a 5-year contract. We're talking about, you know, 27 years old for, if he agreed to it, would be 4 seasons. And I wanted to go through some of the numbers because I think what, you know, everyone hears that and the new salary cap numbers for next year look like they're about $102 million, and that can change. I mean, this time last year, I think everyone thought it was going to be about $90 million for this year, and it ended up being a little over $94 million. So those are obviously fluid numbers. But if Russell agreed to negotiate and extend his contract for 3 seasons, so that means what he's owed left plus 2 additional seasons. Now, what would happen is he'd have to actually go up to the max, and OKC has that cap room. But for 3 seasons, if he stayed in Oklahoma City, would be about a little under $86 million. If he lets the season play out, he signs a 1-1 like Kevin Durant did next year with another team, and then, you know, gets his absolute max, which is 35% in 2 years, then he would only be on the hook for $80.3 million. So he's giving up almost $5 million just to sort of play out, and that's considering the salary cap staying at 102 and, you know, him signing the 1-year contract at his absolute max. He's sort of in the exact same situation that Kevin Durant was last year, where he's got 8 years of service. He'll be a free agent when he's got 9 years of service. And as the CBA is negotiated right now, you get 35% of the max when you have 10 years of service. So he's in the exact same situation that Kevin Durant is in. If you add an additional year for both of those, which is the max that he could do, he would be making about $119 million if he stayed with Oklahoma City and signed on for 4 years, and somewhere else would be a little under $117 million. So no matter how you look at it, Russell Westbrook, as it currently stands, would probably be giving up money to let this contract run out and then sign elsewhere. And obviously there are different things that can happen with a trade. But there's just some stuff going around that I think everyone thinks that he's eligible to make more money, so there's really no reason to stay in Oklahoma City. And, you know, frankly, right now, that's just not true.
Right, yeah, I think that's a common misconception. I feel like people have been just so conditioned to knowing that next year is always more money, and you never want to sign an extension because you're always taking less money. But actually, you know, in this specific situation, when you can renegotiate and extend, it's actually for more money, and that's why I think that it makes the off season, like Sam Presti's off season plans, a lot easier and more clear. Because, you know, if Russell Westbrook was going to make more money by waiting, you know, he could always say, "I'm sorry, if Sam comes to him and asks him to commit to OKC long term to sign an extension, he can always just say, you know, it's not in my financial interest. I'm sorry, I just can't do it. I got to see another year, see what happens." But now he'd be making even more money by committing. So if you go to him and ask him to commit and he says no to even more money, you have to trade him. Just because if he's willing to light millions of dollars on fire just in order to not commit, you have to let him go. You have to trade him. So I think that makes the decisions a lot easier, a lot more clear for Presti. You don't have to start the season with uncertainty, I think, scenario.
Yeah, and I don't want to say Russell Westbrook leaving would be the worst thing in the world for Russell Westbrook. All I'm saying is strictly on money. If you're just talking about money, he would make more money in Oklahoma City. But obviously, he's from LA. If he wants to go back to LA, just like Kevin Durant, I wouldn't put him at fault at all. But you know, if he was to go to LA, and like you said, the best thing for Oklahoma City, if he's not signing up for an extension, would just be to move him. So if he was traded, sort of what teams are you looking at out there, and what would you expect in return for a guy like Russ who's got 1 year left on his contract?
Yeah, so the thing about the 1 year on the contract is the team that acquires him is really going to want to have a good chance of re-signing him. Otherwise, they're not going to want to give up a lot of assets for him. And I think that narrows it down to a lot fewer teams. And of course, it's really hard to know exactly what Russ values. You know, LA is certainly a destination that's talked about ad nauseum, but you know, he hasn't ever really said outright that, you know, he'd love to be there, although we can probably assume it's a great place to live, that he'd like to be in LA, but we don't know if winning, you know, might be more important to him than that. But anyway, so I tweeted this out a couple of days ago. I went and looked into recent players in the last year of their contracts who got traded, and the returns have actually been really quite good, you know, in recent history. Like Carmelo got Gallinari, Wilson Chandler, Mozgov, a first round pick, and a 2016 pick swap from the Knicks. And this is for a guy in the last year of his contract. Kevin Love, of course, got Andrew Wiggins. Goran Dragic, I mean, he's not even a star, and he fetched three first-round picks from the Heat. Dwight Howard got two first-round picks. Nikola Vucevic, Aaron Aflalo, Mo Harkless, and Serge Ibaka just recently, you know, traded from the Thunder. We got Victor Oladipo and the number 11 pick and a rotation player in Ilyasova. So I really think teams sort of tend to be optimistic about their ability to re-sign, or it just happens that, you know, they don't really give up this much unless they're already optimistic about their ability to re-sign. So I really think that some of the trade values that have been going around for him have been pretty low. I think that, you know, if you're looking at someone like the Lakers, I think that like a D'Angelo Russell and Randall would be about the minimum I would accept. And you know, this is Jim Buss. I don't think that the Lakers franchise is particularly well run, and I think they'd be really desperate to get a superstar. You might even be able to finagle both D'Angelo Russell and Brandon Ingram, which I think would be just an unbelievable coup for Sam Presti. The young core that they would have at that point would just be absurd. As far as I think Boston is another, of course, with their treasure chest of assets and them signing Al Horford kind of, you know, shows that they're trying to accelerate the timeline. They don't want to wait for all these young guys to develop. And so something from them, like a Jaylen Brown, maybe one of the Brooklyn picks, and Marcus Smart, that might be a little too much to ask. Danny Ainge is notoriously stingy, but I think that could work. Minnesota is another interesting one. They have a lot of young guys, but we don't know if Russ would want to stay in Minnesota. Other than that, I don't really know. There's not that many viable destinations, really.
Yeah, I agree. And I wrote a little bit about this over at today's Fast Break, so go check that out. But I think I had two of those three destinations. I didn't put Minnesota there because I don't think I think Zach LaVine's fine. I don't necessarily love him, and I really don't love him paired with Victor Oladipo because LaVine's a two, and so is Oladipo. And you know, I don't know about Rubio just because we have Cam Payne, and if we're gonna trade Russ, we might as well throw Payne in there and just see what he can do. And this coming, I love Rubio. I think Rubio's severely underrated because he's a fantastic passer, a great defender, and being a less than average shooter matters less when you have the ball in your hands for, you know, for most of the time, which is what Rubio does. And, you know, it's not like he's assist hunting like Rondo, plus he's, you know, still good on defense. So I would love Rubio. I just don't know if I like the pairing with Campaign. I like the Celtics, and I think they have the assets to do it. But I don't really love Brown or Smart. I think they'll both be fine, but I think if we're talking about a return for Russell Westbrook, you have to get something that's a known quantity, and I don't know if at this time either Marcus Smart or Jaylen Brown are known quantities. I don't know if you know what you have there yet. I would drool for Jay Crowder, and I know it's not a lot out. It's not a lot for Russell Westbrook, but it's sort of exactly what Oklahoma City needs right now. You know, they need some wing that can do something, that can play defense and play on the other side of the court. And when you're talking about players that Oklahoma City needs, you need a player that can play both sides of the court, that's still young and that's locked up on a good contract for a few years. And that's exactly what Jay Crowder is. Now, if you can package Crowder and, you know, I think at that point the return might have to be a little something smaller, maybe a Boston pick, or maybe the right to swap with the Nets, something like that, and, you know, whatever else you can get. But I would jump all over that if Russ wasn't going to sign up for an extension. How do you feel about Jay Crowder, I guess?
You know, I think he's a great player. I think he's an amazing fit, and of course his contract is ridiculously good. I just think that Russ leaves, I think that we're going to kind of want to, at least for 1 year, probably bottom out and sort of get on a younger track. And I think that Jay Crowder, you know, while he's young-ish, he's 26. I don't know if he'd be on the same timeline as, like, I feel like at that point, OKC would probably be, you know, 3 years away from trying to win. And, you know, then you're kind of wasting his prime years just to sort of play with these young developing players. I think he'd be great. Like, if you somehow add him to the team with Russ, that would be unbelievable. But I just don't know, as a return for Russ, you know, when you're looking at a long-term trajectory, I feel like he's really good, but his ceiling, you know, I feel like he's pretty near his ceiling at this point. And if we're not looking to contend or win immediately, I just don't know how helpful he'll be.
Yeah. You are probably right there. Crowder was one of the players that I floated around last year when at the trade deadline. You know, there were some rumors going around about Ibaka then, and I think that would have been phenomenal with Steven Adams sort of making the turn to a viable rim protector and, you know, whatever he was last year. But I guess let's go down that path a little bit. I think if they moved Russ, I still think that they would be too good to bottom out. I think Steven Adams and Victor Oladipo and even Campaign, I think Payne is a is an acceptable backup right now, and I think he's 21 or 22 years old. He's going to be probably a pretty good starting point guard in the league, or at least projects that way. I think the team's probably too good to bottom out right now. So I don't know. I don't know if I necessarily agree that Crowder wouldn't be a good return, but then again, I love Crowder, so I can't really speak rationally about him. Like it's too much. I think with that team, you know, it's sort of where I led off with talking about Oklahoma City. This is a different era. Like on July 4th, everything stopped, and we're no longer a competitive team as far as actual, you know, going to the Western Conference Finals and possibly farther. But it's still, you know, it's not like we're Brooklyn. It's not like we're Philly. We're a fun young team that can, you know, has aspirations of making the playoffs, making some noise, and still has some room to grow with that $20 million. So I don't know. It's definitely different than it has been in the past. So I guess, you know, we talked about the $20 million that they have left, and that's considering, and I said this earlier, but I'll just reiterate it, that's with Morrow coming back, and they have until July 15th, so one more week to make that decision. That's with Sabonis' cap hold, which is a little over $2 million. What do you think Oklahoma City does with that $20 million? Deion's still out there as a restricted free agent. J.R. Smith as unrestricted. Solinger's restricted. Mo Harkless restricted. The crop is definitely shrunk since July 1st, but what do you think they do?
Yeah, that's one of the unfortunate things about, you know, KD's decision, and especially waiting a few days. Like, I don't begrudge him for doing that, but you know, it's the Thunder in kind of a rough spot because pretty much all the good free agents are gone, and especially with, you know, with KD leaving, he left this gaping hole of shooting. Already with him, the team wasn't, you know, an elite shooting team, and now taking off one of the best shooters in the league, they need shooting desperately. And you know, now with Alan Crabb likely going off the market with that Brooklyn offer sheet, I think that, you know, there's just very few wings who can shoot left on the market. And as you mentioned, J.R. Smith might be the best option. I would be really leery if J.R. Smith, though, just because I think he's sort of gotten his act together in Cleveland, you know, because he's buddies with LeBron. LeBron kind of keeps him in line, I think. And if you send him down to OKC, give him some pretty big money, I would be concerned about, you know, his shot selection, his work ethic once he got paid in Oklahoma City. That would scare the hell out of me.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not a big fan of JR. He was just sort of one of the free agents left. The problem with all of the thing about free agency is normally restricted free agents go later just because they, you know, they've got the right to, the teams have the right to match whatever they offer, whatever other offer sheet they sign. And like I mentioned with Deion is one of those for Oklahoma City, but Jared Solinger, Mo Harkless are two restricted free agents from other teams. The problem with that is I'm not really in love with signing up those players for future years. I'm down with if Oklahoma City wants to throw a one-year $20 million contract at JR or hell, even Deion. I don't care. It's not like they're going to do anything else with that money right now anyway, and it's just going to come off the books next year. The problem is with restricted free agents like Solinger and Mo Harkless, they have to sign for at least 2 years. So you're signing up for whatever you have this year and next year. Also, to get their original teams not to match, you're probably going to have to overpay. And with Jared Solinger, I don't love him to begin with. And, you know, there's Oklahoma City sort of has a logjam at the 4-5 right now. Anyway, I want to see what Sabonis can do this year. I want to see if Mitch McGarry can finally get his ass off the bench and play a little bit when everybody's healthy. And Mo Harkless, I think, would be okay because he can sort of fill in that 3, maybe small ball 4 at times. But like I said, you're still going to have to overpay for him. So some of these restricted free agents that are out there, I don't know how well they fit with Oklahoma City. And like you saw with Alan Crabb, who I think got like $75 million or something, at least that's the offer sheet he signed yesterday. That's something that I'm not really looking forward to if I'm a Thunder fan.
Yeah, I think Harkless and Solinger, I mean, especially Solinger, I think as you said, there's just a logjam of bigs. I think they should not be looking to sign basically any bigs at this point, unless they're going to move somebody. And Harkless, like I said, the gaping hole that OKC needs is shooting, and Harkless is not that. He is a really bad shooter, and while he would definitely help on defense, I think, you know, I feel like he's a super version of Andre Robertson almost. You know, I really don't like the fit with him.
Yeah, I think at this point I might just look, and I know you mentioned this at the beginning of the summer, or actually right after the season started, that maybe you just look at throwing some of that money next year at Steven Adams and just trying to get him to commit to something long-term. Maybe if he can, I guess if Russell's, they're not going to sign him as the player for 5 years, but they could do something for 4 years, something Steven Adams. I think, I don't know, something around... God, $18 million, which sounds a little crazy for Steven Adams, but it's something that they could probably do. But outside of that, for, you know, as far as this year with that $20 million, I would be fine with doing sort of what Portland did last year and sitting on it until the trade deadline, and then someone's going to throw some money at you because there's throw a player who's making a bunch of money because they want to go after someone else, and that actually saves money for Oklahoma City by reaching the salary floor. It saves them, you know, about 2/3 of their money. So that's something that I think you can do, and that's, you know, a strange situation and something that's definitely hasn't been the case in Oklahoma City. But, you know, that's sort of the, I guess, the added perk, question mark, with Durant leaving. So I don't know.
Yeah, I definitely think that, you know, if you I think at this point the best use for the cap money in addition to if Russ wants to extend is just to be a salary dumping ground. It is weird, having never been in that position before. You feel like you're basically Philly, but someone I think is going to end up throwing assets to you for a salary dump at this point. You know, people seem to think there's still going to be several trades in this offseason, and that's definitely, you know, future assets. At this point, we're not as much in a now mode. And so I think you want to accumulate as many future assets as possible.
Yeah, that's something that also comes along with the salary dump usually is, you know, depending on how much you take, either a second-round pick or a first-round pick. And Oklahoma City has their first-round pick going to Utah, I believe, for next season. Yeah. It starts next season, and it's lottery-protected. So, you know, if they're losing that pick, at least they, you know, they could possibly get something else back if they take enough money, which is something that I think they should do. And then, you know, whatever, package pick to move up or take the players that you have selected at those positions. I mean, Sam Presti, I think, has shown in the past as an excellent drafter. And while I haven't loved what he's done sort of in trades or free agency, mainly because he hasn't done anything in free agency, which I don't think is necessarily his fault. I think, like I said earlier, it's Oklahoma City, and Pau Gasol showed, among others, that no one really wants to come to Oklahoma City as a free agent. But he's done, Presti, that is, has done a really good job drafting with everyone outside of, you know, maybe that McGarry Hughes this year, and that's just because I didn't really love what they did. But, you know, some of that was to save money and whatever. But, you know, outside of that, we're talking about Steven Adams' campaign this last year. Andre Robertson turned out to be a good player outside the lottery, and that's after Serge Ibaka, James Harden, Russell Westbrook, Kevin Durant. I mean, he's done a really good job in his 10 years plus as the GM. So right now, I would trust, you know, saving that $20 million, try to acquire an asset, a young player, another first-round pick, something like that, and just let Sam Presti do what he does.
Yeah, absolutely. It's kind of rough right now, owing a couple first-round picks from the Cantor and Waiters trades, but I totally agree. Any way that you can get Sam Presti more draft picks, more chances at good young guys, and we know that those are the most valuable players you can possibly have, be under team control on a cheap contract. And so, yeah, anyway, you can accumulate more draft picks, I definitely would. Like, you know, if somebody would give up an asset for Cantor, I mean, I feel like that would be a no-brainer at this point, just because I don't think he's as necessary anymore. And we've seen just, you know, the team's just not better with him on the court.
Yeah, there's a couple of things I want to unpack there. I'm trying to think how to go about this. I wrote a few things last summer saying that I didn't really love Oklahoma City matching Enes Kanter's contract, but I'd be willing to take it all back if it was the reason that Kevin Durant came back. And I think you saw sort of this year that, you know, Kanter can do some things on the court, and he's elite at what he does well. He's one of the best offensive rebounders in the league, and at putbacks, he's great. He's a fine screen setter. He's actually decent in the post, which I know isn't the most efficient way to score, but sometimes it is nice when you're, you know, running a second unit of Deion Waiters and Randy Foy to give someone the ball who can actually score about a point per possession. But the things he doesn't do well are sort of the reasons that Kevin Durant is gone now. And it's because, you know, they use so much of their resources in trying to bring back Kanter. And, you know, you can say at the time that they couldn't do anything else with their money. But, you know, they could have done something else with that money, just not last year. You're looking at right now, that could be an extra $17 million that they can go chase something, that they can do whatever they want to do. And right now, I don't know what the feeling is around the league. I have no sources. I don't know shit about shit. But I do know that some teams think that Enes Kanter, that Oklahoma City should have to give up something to acquire Enes Kanter, and some teams think that they would give up something to acquire Enes Kanter. And I think it depends on whether you're a contender right now or not. You know, Oklahoma City is not, so I think that they're probably waving Enes Kanter out there, and anything that sticks, they're just going to kind of – they're going to let it go, and I think they probably should. I think I would love to do something else with that money besides paying Enes Kanter $17 million to come off the bench, and that's sort of the second place I wanted to go. If Enes Kanter and Steven Adams are your starting four and five, things are going to go terribly. Enes Kanter can't start at the four. There's just no world where Enes Kanter can play 82 games or whatever, 75 games at the four, and then have, I don't know, Sabonis come off the bench as the backup five or whatever it is. I mean, I think Kanter still needs to be on the bench to back up Steven Adams, and I still think he has a role with the team if they choose to go that way. But I've seen a lot of stuff floated around about Kanter and Adams starting, and it makes me want to pull my hair out.
Yeah, I mean, as far as Kanter's trade value, I am a little pessimistic about it, just because, all this talk about post-big men becoming dinosaurs, I think that's a little overwrought. But we've seen it recently. You know, the Milwaukee Bucks have been trying to unload Greg Monroe, and they've been unsuccessful. And we saw that the 76ers, Philly, have been trying to unload Jahlil Okafor, and they've been unsuccessful. And both of those players are very, very similar to Enes Kanter. I think that really offense-only centers are really – people are seeing how little value they really have at this point. I mean, I do believe that there are a few teams out there who – some of the slower teams who haven't adapted as much. Maybe we could throw them in with the Lakers, and they would give them something. I could definitely see that. But yeah, as far as a starting lineup of Kanter and Adams, I think that would be a disaster. I mean, it worked versus the Spurs because they had very specific personnel that made it advantageous. But there's maybe, you know, three or four other teams in the league where the matchups work like that. Like maybe the Memphis Grizzlies did it work, you know, versus Zach Randolph and Gasol. But like so many teams are starting stretch four, small ball fours now. That, I mean, having Kanter chase one of those guys around the perimeter is just, oh God, that would be a nightmare.
Yeah, that, well, and even, I mean, you're talking about small ball fours, but if you're doing he's guarding a big man in the pick and roll as a four, he gets just killed, and that's one of the reasons that he couldn't stay on the, or that he was able to stay on the floor against San Antonio and not against Golden State, is for whatever reason Popovich refused to, after game one, refused to put Kanter in the pick and roll and just tried to post him up. And Kanter's a big dude. Like, you're not able to just back him down and you know, shoot a little jump hook or fadeaway or whatever it is. It just doesn't work like that. One of the things I did want to talk about a little bit that you mentioned was about post big men. And they are, I think it is probably a little preemptive to say that they're, going the opposite way. I think the reason that Jahlil Okafor and, you know, even when you look at, like, LeBron James, when he posts up, there's a difference between those guys doing it and Al Jefferson doing it. The difference is when those guys do it, there's a threat of a pass. Like, there's a threat of them actually finding someone. And Jahlil showed in college that he's an excellent passer out of the post, which is why it's okay to try something there. And I think put better players around him, and he'll be fine. I'm not necessarily high on him, but I think he'll be okay. But, you know, when you put LeBron James in the post, if anybody doubles or if anybody turns their head to LeBron, he's going to find that open guy. Enes Kanter is not that guy. Enes Kanter is not a very good passer, and especially out of the post when you put his back to the goal and ask him to think about different things at once. So,
yeah, we
thought, go ahead.
Actually, in the Warriors series, when Kanter got played off the floor, like even on offense, what they started doing is they started sending late doubles at Kanter, like, because he's all right as a passer if you double him immediately, because, you know, when he very first gets the ball, he's aware, he's looking to pass a little bit, but once he starts his move, like once he, you know, starts his move, he is tunnel vision towards the basket. He's going to go up with it almost certainly, and the Warriors just killed him with that. I know they forced several turnovers, they blocked the shot a few times. And that was a big reason, as you know, as much as his defense, why he couldn't play, you know, even 5 minutes series toward the end.
Yeah, and you know, with Kanter, he has to provide offensive production, because I know he had a couple of blocks in the Spurs series, but there were still times, probably more often than not, where he was still pretty bad. It wasn't as noticeable, because the Spurs of this last year weren't the Spurs of the past, where they're moving the ball and whipping it from side to side. They posted up more than anybody else, and it was because they had Kawhi Leonard and LaMarcus Aldridge, who were two of the better post-up players in the league, so that's fine. But, you know, you sort of saw what happens when you have an Enes Kanter. You try to play him a lot against the Warriors. He ends up playing 5 minutes, which, credit to Billy Donovan. I was down on Donovan for a lot of the regular season, because I think it took him too long to finally realize to stagger Durant and Westbrook. And but what, you know, for whatever that's worth, he sat Enes Kanter for most of the Warriors series, despite him being what, the third highest paid player on the team. So I mean, that's something I guess to look forward to, that Billy Donovan's not going to be stubborn like Scott Brooks.
Yeah, I mean, that's been my biggest the biggest bonus I've seen with Donovan is his ability to, you know, not be stuck in his ways. He's going to try out things, and you know, during the regular season it kind of looked like he was just throwing shit at the wall and seeing if it would stick, but you know, when you got to the playoffs, you kind of got to see that, you know, no, he really knows what he's doing. I'm still a little confused about what happened with campaign, because you know, throwing him on the bench, you know, they traded DJ Augustine, they made him the backup point guard, which was great, and not great for a stretch, and so they basically stuck him on the bench for like 20 games, and they brought him back in the playoffs against the San Antonio Spurs.
Right.
That was the most baffling decision he made of the year. But I agree, overall, Donovan has been great, and I'm glad that he's our coach.
Yeah, there were a few things that he did not do throughout the year. But, you know, even in the Warriors series, I think making Andre Robertson sort of the screen man or the dunker was a fantastic adjustment. Robertson's always been a pretty good off-ball player on offense, just because he's, you know, athletic and long and can move and can rebound. But if you ask him to, you know, if you stick him in the corner, then you kind of saw what happened last year and at the beginning of the Warriors series. But Donovan did do a few things that I liked in the playoffs. So, you know, we'll see what he can do with the young team. And among that young team is Campaign. And we've mentioned him a few times. He didn't really get much playing time until the turn of the new year in 2016. I think he really started playing, it was like the Suns or something, right after Christmas. But then he started playing well, and he dropped off a little bit at the end of the year, but I think it was January or February, you know, he had put up 44 threes, made like 38% of them. He did well. I think he ended the year just under 33%, which you sort of expect for a rookie. But do you think Cam is ready to start if Russ, let's say he's traded this offseason, do you think Cam's ready to start?
I mean, I don't think Campaign next year is the starting point guard of the playoff team. No. Mm-hmm. I mean, I that in maybe 2 years. I think he can get there definitely next year. I mean, his defense is still really, really bad, and he's still pretty thin. Like, you know, a lot of point guards are going to be able to take him into the post, mm-hmm. which is really not good. And but the one interesting thing I think that Cam brings, and you brought up his 3-point shooting, is just it would be interesting if Russell Westbrook is traded, because so long we've from a team building perspective, we've had this paradigm that, you know, we're gonna have a point guard who can't shoot, and so you're going to build the whole team around this idea that we're going to have a point guard who can't shoot. And so it would be really just nice and interesting to have that not be the case at some point, where I really hope that shot can be consistent. It's crazy how much it dropped off. Like, I went and looked up his splits. He was 40% before the All-Star break and 15% after the All-Star break, which is just nuts. I mean, it's only 33 attempts, so it's a small sample, but. And maybe he just hit that rookie wall. You know, he's not used to playing that many games and all that stuff. But I do think that his shot, you know, the mechanics seem pretty good. And I think ultimately he'll probably end up being around, you know, 36, 37% 3-point shooter, probably kind of like a Mike Conley ultimately. And I think ultimately that's probably, I think, about where he'll end up. Maybe, yeah, I think not quite a ceiling. Yeah, probably. Probably his ceiling is about Mike Conley, I think.
Yeah, and if he reached that ceiling with Oklahoma City, that'd be fantastic. I mean, I would absolutely take a Mike Conley right now. I think what Cam does a little better than I expected. Coming out of the draft, I wasn't really high on Cam Payne. I wanted, Rondae Hollis, Jefferson was up there, obviously Devin Booker, who went before the Thunder drafted. But one thing Cam Payne does that I didn't expect, which is why I wasn't so high on him, is he's a playmaker with the ball. And when he does so, he's looking to distribute. He's looking for the role man. He's looking for, you know, the shooters out in the corner. And he does that so much better than I thought. First of all, a rookie could do with the Thunder. Second of all, a guy sort of from a mid-major coming to the Oklahoma City Thunder playing big minutes would be able to. And then, you know, we're a 21-year-old or 20-year-old at the time who, you know, hadn't... He sort of came on the scene late, but he was actually pretty good. He's shown a good mid-range and floater game. You talked about his defense. His defense is awful. His defense is just terrible. But as a Thunder fan, you know, we're kind of used to bad defense from the point guard position. So, you know, and obviously there's a difference. If you're bad on defense, you have to be just fantastic on offense, which Russ is and Cam isn't yet. But that's something that I think when you break down what they do well, a guy like Cam is easier to build around because, like you mentioned, he can shoot. He's a good playmaker. And point guard defense matters, but it matters less than, like, Enes Kanter's defense. So when you're comparing, it's not a one-to-one comparison. When Kanter's on the floor, you have no rim protection. You're giving up the easiest shot at the rim. Or he can't move his feet in the pick and roll, so it's a guard just going right around him as Kanter sort of opens the gate for a guard to get right to the rim, you know, or whatever it is. And Cam Payne has some things to work on, but I think it's probably easier to improve defense as a guard just because the margins are a little smaller. It doesn't matter as much if you're not a very good defender on the guard because you have help behind you, whereas the case isn't the same for a big man.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so let's end it with this. I want two predictions from you, and we're not going to hold you to them unless they're wrong enough that I can make fun of you for them. But I want two predictions, and it can be, first of all, I want Oklahoma City's record, but if there's anything else that you wanted to add, as far as what happens, MVP, sixth man, most important player for the Thunder, whatever it is. But the first one I want if, Russell is retained, and then second, if he is traded or whatever happens into this next year.
So if we keep Russ, and I guess assuming if we keep us, we probably need to keep Deion Waiters. If it's a reasonable price, probably I wouldn't go higher than 12, maybe 13 million a year, and would really like to be 3 years, but it'd probably be four. But assuming that Deion Waiters comes back, and maybe they can bring over an Alex Abrines or some kind of, you know, additional shooter to the team. I think probably 45 to 47 wins. I think something like the 6 to 8 seed. I think that they're clearly worse than, of course, the Warriors, the Spurs, Clippers. I think Utah is going to be a real surprise team this year. No, maybe not such a surprise since their roster looks great, but I think that they could be as high as the 2 seed. But yeah, I think they're also going to be worse than Memphis for sure, and they probably would be in the tier with like the Rockets and the Blazers. I think those three teams probably be fighting for the 6 to 8 spots next year. I think that we, you know, we can expect Russ to rack up a bazillion triple doubles. That would be fun. He's going to smash his record from this year. I would predict 5 triple doubles if he's healthy for the whole year. And without Russ, but of course with those triple doubles, I'm imagining he's probably going to shoot up 41-42% from the field. There's going to be a lot of 1-on-5 kind of plays, because now that, you know, defenses don't have Kevin Durant to focus on, so they could really make life really tough for him, and that's why shooting around him is so desperately needed. But anyway, without Russ, as I said, I think I'm a little lower on this team without Russ than you are, just because I feel like, you know, with next year, their pick goes to Utah, but it's lottery protected. And so I really think that they would have an incentive, like maybe the team, I don't think that they're a playoff team. I don't think, even if you add a small piece, that they'd be a playoff team with campaign starting a point guard and no real wing who can help you. I think that they probably win 3 games if Russ is gone, which probably put them, you know, picking like 4th, 5th, or 6th in the draft, which I think would be just fine.
Yeah, I think I'm thinking about the Thunder with Jay Crowder and not Russell Westbrook, which is why I'm a little higher. And I think some of my optimism is just that I think it's kind of fun. Like, I think it's kind of cool to think about the Thunder sort of in a different light than we have for the past 9 years. But, you know, all of that will probably go away come Halloween or whenever the Thunder's first game is, when I realize that it's freaking Andre Robertson starting at the 3 and not Kevin Durant anymore.
I totally agree with you on the optimism and it being a little exciting. You know, I feel like for the last, you know, several years, there's been so much tension. There's been so much pressure and expectations and everything. And it was always win now mode. And every postseason, it felt like so huge, and especially the last couple of years with Kevin Durant's free agency hanging over everything, you know, the spotlight was on OKC, and it would be just nice to have a core of young guys where you have, you know, some hope, and I feel like hope, you know, it's one of the best things you can have as a fan. You know, the mystery box could be anything, right? Basically, right. And so I definitely share that optimism, and that's why I like, you know, trading for, if we end up moving Russ, trading him for draft picks or trading him for some rookies or first or second year guys.
Yeah, it has been weird, and that's, I guess, one of the reasons that I've been optimistic, or maybe not even optimistic, but just sort of excited about this offseason after I got through the initial depression of Kevin Durant leaving, because it has been, you know, for 9 years, we're supposed to be competing, we're supposed to be one of the 2-3 best teams in the West, and we never made it that far, and I'm sure a year from now, I will trade everything so that we become a legitimate contender and have that pressure, but right now, it's still a little fresh, it's still kind of interesting to see what, you know, Sam Presti can do, or disappoint, or you know, whatever happens. It's definitely going to be an interesting, what are we? We're still about 3.5 months out from the first game of the NBA season. But I think that's going to wrap up everything that we have today. Before I let you go, Jason, do you have anything else you want to say on KD leaving for the Warriors?
Well, I would say that, you know, if he wants to win a couple titles with Golden State and then come back LeBron style, we'll go ahead and take him back with open arms.
Yeah, 100%. If he loses it next year and wants to come back, or wins it next year and wants to come back, I don't care. We'll gut everything. for him, which there's been a couple of scenarios floating around in my head that I think we'll save for a future podcast, which hopefully we can get you back on. Hey, all right, I think that's everything for today. I want to thank Jason Potter for coming on. This was sort of a last-minute thing. I wanted to do something this week. Figured I should for the Kevin Durant leaving. As I said earlier, at JPOSU on Twitter. He's a great follow. He has some cap stuff going on. Has some poker stuff, if I'm not wrong. And you said you're an Oklahoma State fan. Is that correct?
Yes.
So all you people from Stillwater, go ahead and check him out and others as well. Hey, Jason, thanks a lot for coming on. You can follow me at Sean_Woods15 on Twitter. Hopefully you're listening to this because you subscribe to the Thunderous Transmissions podcast or the Hardwood Paroxysm Podcasting Network. I want to thank those guys for letting me broadcast my voice over their airwaves. Jason, thanks again, man, and I will talk to you soon.
Thanks a lot, man. It was fun.
Supply blockbuster movies and hoes again. We were still catching lightning bugs when the plague hit the backyard. Had to come in that dark, cause the big shorties act hard. Okay, now day can't be Grand Crossing. First day, niggas shooting. Summer school kids to losing students, but the CPD getting new recruitment. I summer don't get no shine no more. I summer die, I summer time, don't got no time no more. Summer friends don't stay, summer friends just stay. Blessing, I'm ready, I'll wait. Never let a friendship get in my way. Never let a block get in my way. Make the whole song, do whatever I say. 79, 79, 79, babe. Some of my homegirls got lost in the paperwork. They was good friends, but I make a flirt. Cause if it ain't work, can't make it work. It's been a minute since I called on a friend. Fucked up and fucked all my friends. Stick around. Some friends, some friends. Some friends don't stick around. Stick around, yeah.
was so young before I could remember. I would always treat my game like family member. Even when I change, a nigga never change, oh. I always bring my friend, my friends, my friend, my friends, oh. When I was so young before I could remember, I would always treat my game like family members. Even when